Yo everyone, welcome back to Brand New Techish. Abadesi is not here for the intro, unfortunately, but I do call her and she does come in, and the audio quality won't be, you know, the normal techish standard, but you'll still enjoy it. And then after that, I answer like frequently asked questions that I found on Twitter for the techish people them. And yeah, so enjoy. So hey everyone, we've got Abba via phone. Superstar Abba, she's here in the building. Well, not in the building, on the phone.
Techish hotline.
Techish hotline. Yeah. So
T-E-C-H-I-S-H.
So I wanted to talk to you about quickly about WeWork. So they so their IPO has been cancelled, and I wanted to get your thoughts cancel culture. I wanted to get your thoughts as to why this company been busted and not Uber or Lyft. You know, a lot of those companies have lost a lot of value, but this is the one company where everyone's like, no, that's it, we've had enough. Why do you think?
I think the biggest thing is that it was just grossly overvalued. Mm. You know, when we think of companies like Uber and Lyft and what they've been able to do, disrupting an entire industry, like completely transforming the way we transport ourselves from A to B. Uber even went into the food delivery space. The incredible amount of data they have on their users to be able to like roll out financial products like the Uber credit card. What you see as proprietary technology and also like market dominance and like new fields, there's something there that still has capacity to keep growing, that will keep investors interested. Whereas WeWork, as we said before when we talked about it in this previous podcast, WeWork's not even a tech company. It's a property company.
For real.
They haven't innovated in any industry. They haven't disrupted anything. They used a lot of venture capital to buy up a bunch of real estate. I'm not even going to go into the shadiness of the founder and the fact that there's so little integrity in the actual core values of the company based on how he's behaved. I mean, this is a good thing for society, because when companies go public, pension funds go into that, retirement funds go into that. You know, we have institutional investors starting to put up individuals' cash into these big companies. And, you know, it's a house of cards, seriously, seriously, seriously overvalued. And, you know, they say they postponed the IPO to later in the year, but let's face it, this IPO is probably never going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. So apparently there's whispers now that Airbnb is going public next year. Do you think this will have any impact on them, or do you think they're a completely like different company and they've got something real there?
You know, if we just talk about founders alone, and the legacies that they've been able to establish in the time that their companies have run, putting Adam Neumann and Brian Chesky, you know, par on par, or like sparring in a boxing match, I don't even think they're comparable. Mm. I don't even think they're comparable. I mean, when you looked at some of WeWork's filing papers, how many of Adam Neumann's family members were somehow employed by the company on six-figure salaries?
Yeah, it's dodgy as hell.
You know, Brian Chesky has been able to do some incredible things at Airbnb. The thing that I find the most powerful was his decision to make his role as CEO also head of community, because he identified the fact that unless he, as the most powerful and senior person in the organization, was not aware and optimizing for things like inclusion and belonging, not only in the company, but in also like customers' experience of using Airbnb products, that change wouldn't happen. So I just feel that like the approach that they're taking on a cultural level within their company is like really, really strong. But also Airbnb has been transformative in identifying a trend in how like millennial generations want to travel. Mm. They've identified the fact that people want to spend as much money, you know, on experiences, if not more on experiences than material things. And that's why they're trying to, you know, shift towards that. And, you know, the hotel industry have felt the impact of Airbnb. And if that trend continues and Airbnb can continue with that, I do think that that is a stock that I would be bullish about. Like, I do think there is potential for growth. And I think they have struck upon something which is quite unique and hard to replicate.
You know what? I agree with you. I think as a company, it will do great. The irony is, though, is that I have actually, as a user, have become really tired of Airbnb. Like, I don't use it anymore. I prefer hotels. Maybe that's me becoming real bougie in my old age. But, like, I don't know, man. I've been to a few...
Why, though?
You know when you just go somewhere and you're like, you know, they're trying to teach you how the lock works, and you just want to go into your room and just, like, you want it to be easy. And maybe I've picked bad, like, places to stay. And maybe I don't have the, you know... the due diligence to be able to research places. And you know, as a black person, sometimes you feel like you're being judged on the platform when you're trying to message like a landlord. And I know they're doing work on that now. And I think that's something that they should really like look into, because I have seen like firsthand, anecdotally, a lot of discriminatory things happen on that platform where like we'll get somebody else to apply for the house and they'll get it and I won't. I'm thinking to myself, wow.
That's a huge part of why Brian Chesky made himself the head of the community. And like, you know, one thing I'll say is like Airbnb have done a lot to try and surface like higher quality people and like create incentives within the way the product is designed to make hosts be good. You know what I mean? Like you can now be a super host, so you're always going to be top of listings. And I think, of course, if you're like super frugal, you're going to find some pretty dodgy stuff on the platform. But if you're happy to spend a bit more, I mean, I will always default to stay at an Airbnb over a hotel where I can.
So the other story I wanted to talk about was, you're familiar with Andela, right?
Of course. Oh, the layoffs.
Yeah, so up to 400 developers have been laid off, I think across Nigeria, I think Kenya and Uganda. I went to visit them in Uganda while I was there, and I was really touched by like their work, because essentially they were training up a lot of people that were, you know, that didn't have a lot of opportunity, and they were making them developers and getting them positions at big tech companies all over the world. So it was a really amazing thing. But they've basically said they're changing their strategy now, where they're looking to work with senior developers. So they're no longer training the, you know, junior developers. And it's an ongoing trend, really, isn't it, Abba? Like, people are just, nobody wants to work with junior talent anymore. Everybody wants to work with the senior talent.
I think it's a difficult one. And I think, you know, we have limited information about this, but I suspect that, you know, just from a business model perspective and probably thinking about their own path to profitability, they now have to start thinking about where it makes sense for them to put their focus. And, you know, junior developers, with all of the boot camps going around, there's actually like quite a lot of supply in the job market now for people at that level of expertise. And where the real struggle is happening is for senior developers with those more like specific areas of focus, whether it's machine learning, etc. So, you know, they demand higher wages, they have higher valued skills, they are in more limited supply, and possibly from a business perspective, it just makes more sense for them to put that focus on that, because since they started, there's just been an explosion in the pipeline on the junior end of the scale. You can learn to code yourself, you can go to boot camps, you know, more and more companies are even like training people in coding skills. So I just think it on an existential level, it makes sense for them to do that. But of course, my heart goes out to the people who've lost out.
Yeah, I hope they all find jobs pretty quickly. It is a sad thing when these type of stuff
happens. They should go on pocket jobs.
Go on pocket jobs, and you can find something, a brand new chapter in your life journey.
I mean, let's face it, to have that name on your CV is a privilege. It's
absolutely
incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was there in Uganda, they were telling me stories of people who hadn't even interacted with computers. And then within 6 months to a year, they were trained developers. So I really
bought Andela Mafia. For sure.
Yeah, I really bought into their story and narrative. It's just a shame that these type of things happen, but that's capitalism, unfortunately. You know, the market changes and you've got to adapt, otherwise you're out of business.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
We want to tell you about one of our sponsors, Founders Academy, a new type of business school for a changing world. Their 9-month, zero tuition, alt MBA program allows professionals to reinvent their careers in London's most dynamic scale-ups, including Bulb, Depop, Oak North, Farm Drop and more. Applications for their first drive are still open. Visit foundersacademy.io to apply today and tell them Tekish sent you. Cheers.
It's been a big week for Rihanna. So she debuted her new Savage Fenty collection in New York. It's been hailed as one of the most inclusive fashion shows ever. She had performances from everyone from Migos to Big Sean to Fabolous. I wish I was there. You can stream it on Amazon Prime. But I really think Rihanna's on track to be one of the next black women billionaires, because she's building an empire. Fashion is a huge market. And there's so many other places she could go from that. So really, really exciting and big, big things for the culture.
Yeah, I think that people have been asking her, like, when are you going to go back into the studio and make an album? And it's like, why should she? Like, there's so many more lucrative opportunities, like, outside of music, really. So more power to her.
Exactly.
I think she's doing her own films as well. They're calling it Fenty Films. So, like,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's next level. It's the next level. I think a lot of these artists are just realizing the brand equity they built up can just be placed in so many other different lucrative industries that, like, the music is just, it's low level marketing now. Like, you don't even need it really anymore.
Exactly. And also, like, if you think about it from an angle of ownership, you know, when Rihanna releases music as a recording artist, 100% of those proceeds aren't going to her, right? Like, she signed mm-hmm. a deal. Most artists these days are making money through touring. And touring is exhausting.
It is, yeah.
So, you know, better to just, like, productize and be a CEO and just, like, expand your brand wherever it can take you. And also, like, you know, the way we're obsessed with influencer marketing right now, it's like when you, as a celebrity, decide to launch a product, you already have your channels established, you have your unique value proposition established, and you have an unfair advantage because there's no other Rihanna in the world. So from that lean startup methodology thinking, you're suddenly like, holy shit, you're onto something.
Completely, yeah. I mean, I have a friend of mine who just got like a record deal as a producer, and I was asking him about the economics of like being signed, and I was like, wow, you're being ripped off. They give you an advance essentially, and then like in terms of like the actual record sales, he sees very, very little of it. And I'm just like, wow, like this music. And I'm sure Rihanna probably signed a contract. I don't know if she's got a new contract, but she might have signed one years ago, and when she was a, you know, a less established artist. So it probably isn't as lucrative for her, you know. She probably doesn't, like you said, she doesn't own 100% of her music like that. Maybe she does, but I doubt it. So go out there and own something and build brands. Like, why the hell not? Like, and
yeah, if you're anyone with like a significant social media following and you are not monetizing that somehow in this age with recessions on the horizon, you crazy.
You cray cray.
All right, cool. Just sitting on money.
Yeah, cool. All right, we'll leave it at that then. Is there anything you want to plug?
I feel like I messed. Yeah, so it's our birthday month at Hustle Crew. Woo-hoo! Hustle Crew turns 3. Wait, when's Pocket's birthday?
So we turn 4, like September, but I've been really bad. I haven't kept track of it, to be honest. But yeah, we turn 4 in September.
Birthday month. So we're turning 3, you're turning 4. But yeah, just to tell everyone who's listening, follow Hustle Crew Live on social media because we're giving away a bunch of things to celebrate our birthday, including free coaching sessions with yours truly, and of course, copies of my book, Dream Big, Hustle Hard. So yeah, just check out Hustle Crew Live and bring some of that birthday goodness into your life.
Happy birthday, Hustle Crew. I tweeted about how, like, it's amazing. I think Hustle Crew turned 3, Pocket turned 4, Galden Magazine, which is like a backstage capital backed company, which is like a magazine for women of color, turned 4. Whole bunch of companies that just like that are doing stuff related to like community and tech and like inclusion. They're all turning like 3 or 4. I think we just all rode a wave in that time period, like 2015, 2016.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter happened, and then it's like we all just got super fucking woke.
yeah, it's so many great companies. I can't remember all of them. I think Vite Watches, Galden, Code 23, Code Street, Amalia. Like, shout out to all those companies that just had their birthdays. And you know what? It's not easy to stay in business for that long. Let's keep it real. Like, it's not easy to stick around. Like, 3-4 years is like 10 years in a career, in a normal career. Like, just staying alive as a company.
And also, like, think of how many times, like, we almost died.
Yeah.
And we're still alive.
We bulletproof.
So I think about that.
We like
I'm just
cats.
Like, wow. Exactly. Because I was just like, if I listened to people, Hustle Crew would be dead.
Yeah.
The number of investors that were like, nah, this will never work. The number of companies that were like, no one's ever going to pay you to address racism and sexism. And it's like, well, I'm glad I didn't listen to them because we're still alive.
F you guys to all those people that said that. But yeah, cool. Abba, we'll let you go, and we'll catch up soon.
All right. Peace out, Techish fam. Catch us on hashtag Techish.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
So the other thing I'm going to do, I'm going to answer questions that I see on our Techish hashtag. So someone was talking about last week's episode about podcasts, and they said, you briefly touched on it, but I would like to hear more about the ideal number of hosts, relying on interview-based format versus chit-chat, technical considerations. So the ideal number of hosts is something that, you know, is personal to each and every listener, but me, I have a preference for at least maybe 2 hosts, 3 hosts at best. I think once you go beyond that, it just becomes white noise. I've tried to listen to podcasts where there's like 4 or 5 people, and you know, I'm terrible at interrupting Abadesi. I see a lot of the comments, like, and I'm trying my best, actually, because it's something that I have to work on. But once you get to the scale of 4 or 5 people, everyone's going to be talking over each other, and it's just a complete hot mess. Interview-based first format versus chit-chat. Now, this is another personal preference, and I think all of these are just personal preferences. I don't have the hard and fast answers. I'm not going to start quoting data towards you and saying, okay, do that, do this, do that. But I feel like the interview format is a bit played out. And when I started Techish with Abba, I intentionally didn't want it to be an interview podcast. I feel like interview podcasts get a bit formulaic. They're not necessarily like fluid and organic conversations. It's one person asking another person a question. And I don't even like doing interviews per se. I prefer just to have a conversation. But I mean, it depends. What's your objective with your podcast? If you're trying to just to meet people and network and just get to know amazing people, then you have to do an interview format. If you're trying to flesh out a specific topic and you want to do something that's more personality based, obviously you're going to have to just do chit chat. But yeah, that's my personal preference. I think 5 years ago, it was a great idea. I mean, if you look at Tim Ferriss, he's built a giant business just off of interviews. Joe Rogan, giant podcast just off of interviews. But there's only so many people in this world that also merit an interview. Like, some people want to interview, you know, me. Or I'm like, bruv, like, I don't have that much to say to a certain extent. Like, I'm not, you know, Elon Musk. So, not, I don't know. It's to me, it's a personal preference thing. I prefer chit-chat based podcast now. Technical considerations. Either invest in your own good setup or go to a studio. We use a studio. Either or. I think technical considerations are not a big deal. I think that's one of those things that people procrastinate on. And I think it's just something that you just need to, you know, find something that works for you and that allows you to produce good quality audio and just do it.
Just do it!
Okay, so there's another question here. How does one approach arrogant software engineers? I'm guessing, is it for you trying to find like a co-founder, or are you trying to work with teammates at a company? If it's just trying to work with teammates at a company, I mean, F those guys. That's not an excuse. No one should be arrogant in the workplace. I don't know. Do a Tekashi 6ix9ine and snitch. Talk to HR and say these guys are moving like waste, man. But then I haven't really done the corporate thing too much. I don't know if that's okay. Now, if it comes to like finding a co-founder and you're saying, how do you approach arrogant software engineers as a technical co-founder? You don't want to work with them. Listen, being in a co-founder situation, it's like a marriage. And if they're really arrogant from the jump, it's going to be hell on earth. Like, humility is such an underrated thing. Like, and you're probably actually fortunate that, you know, they're being arrogant because they've revealed themselves and you don't really want to work with them. I've seen so many great companies and great ideas die just based off like co-founder relationship and co-founder drama. So, you know, if you're seeing signs from the jump that, you know, they're not a nice person, yeah, run for the hills. I know you're going to be like, but I got my app and I need to build my app. And if I don't do this, my app's not going to come to fruition and I'm not going to be a billionaire. But there's other ways. Another question, someone asked via email, what kind of books are we reading at the moment? So I can't answer Abadesi's one. I have tried to do this thing now where like once a month I pick out a book on a topic that is completely random that I know nothing about, and then another book which is kind of in my niche, which is either like businessy or like self-help. Some people hate self-help books. I'm kind of a big fan of them, to my own annoyance. I do find them helpful. So the one book I was reading recently is called The Power of Now, and it's so cheesy. Like, a homie of mine recommended it and I was like, come on bro, what is this like? But I stuck with it and I gave it a go, and it actually surprisingly is quite enlightening. The basic premise of the book is that, yo, just stay present to the moment, and if you do that, then a lot of your worries will be gone. I mean, everything, all these self-help stuff, you got to take it with a pinch of salt. There is very much that kind of white middle class, upper middle class American idea that if you just work hard, you can make it. And it's of course that's not true. And definitely all of the listeners of this podcast know that's not true. But there is something to it where a lot of times we do get stuck in our own heads and we do ruminate about the past and the future. And definitely as a CEO, I'm super guilty of that. And I'm always thinking about, you know, 10 steps ahead and, oh my God, that previous meeting, I messed it up and whatever, whatever. So I have found The Power of Now very helpful. I definitely recommend it. But obviously, bear in mind, it's very cheesy. It's very self-help Oprah style. You know, if you just feel the moment, everything will be good. But, you know, I'm of the mindset, if there's some value in something, just take everything with a pinch of salt and grab the value and run. The other book I'm reading, I forgot the title, it's about, essentially it's about China and how they are now operating on a global scale. They've got this thing called the Belt and Road Initiative, which is essentially, they're trying to recreate what used to be known as the Silk Road, which is like trading routes from parts of Europe to Asia to East Africa. Anyways, it's like this whole master plan they have, and they're going to spend like 10 trillion building infrastructure projects, you know, all throughout Asia. I personally found it fascinating. It's something, you know, in the media we often see a one-sided Western-based narrative about China, and it was refreshing to read something from their perspective about what they're trying to do. and don't get twisted, some of it was damn frightening. Like, essentially, there was a port in Sri Lanka that they borrowed money to the Sri Lankan government for them to build, and then once they couldn't get repaid, they ended up taking over the port. So, like, some people see this as a form of, like, new form of colonialism. I know if you're from the African continent, you've probably have those type of fears, and I do have those type of fears as well. Interesting tangent, actually. I saw a tweet, somebody, I think the person's Ethiopian, and they were saying how they visited Ethiopia and they saw signs in Amharic, which is a native language in Ethiopia, English and Chinese, and they put the Chinese in capital letters and were like, oh my god, I'm so shook, there's Chinese writing here. And I saw that, I was like, yo, but hold on, there's English writing here, and that's just as foreign as Chinese. It's like, to a certain extent, we've been so colonized by the Western world that we just take it as a natural thing, and if anybody else tries to come in and have influence, we get scared. It's like, no, but English. And I'm like, fam, that's not our native tongue, so why are you getting so comfortable with that? But at the same time, as soon as you see something else, it's next level. Anyways, I digress. But yeah, so I think I'm just trying to read books on topics I don't know anything about, because bro, it's easy to get arrogant out here. If you have a bit of success, you start thinking you know everything. So I'm like, okay, you know what, let me pick something random. And if you've got any recommendations for anything random that I should learn, let me know. Alright, cheers. Yo, thank you for listening to Techish. Use the hashtag Techish to find us on Twitter. We can chat and interact on all of that. You can support us on our Patreon, patreon.com/techish. And yeah, we'll catch you next week. Peace.